stay tuned for a special presentation.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Corporate Homie. It's a podcast that you've heard founded by our very own TK partner, Demetra Liggins, and her sister, Bemetra Simmons. And the podcast, Demetra and Bemetra discuss a variety of topics and tips to help women and minorities succeed in the corporate world. So without further ado, ladies.
Turn me up. Are you on?
I'm on.
All right. What's up, homies? Hi.
Welcome to the Corporate Homie Podcast.
The first live Corporate Homie podcast.
Woo, woo. I said a woo woo.
Well, if you listen to the podcast.
If you listen to a podcast, you know I'm big on
my boobs. She does that every single episode. Every. And sometimes I like to whoop, but she doesn't enjoy my whoop. But I think I have a good.
No, that's not your answer.
No whooping for me. Okay, fine. So we're really excited to be with you guys today. This is a little bit as kind of a mini version of what we usually do when we go out to speak, but really pretty close to how the podcasts work in that it's about 30 minutes. And so we're not going to take up a lot of your time, especially
or
when
from
there's,
all the champagne.
I was about to say, when there's alcohol in the room, we're really careful not to speak.
I want to work here now.
We're really careful not to speak too long when there's alcohol in the room. Before we get started, we always like to tell our audience a little bit about ourselves. It's sort of like, why should you listen to us? Like, why would we have anything that you might find important? I work right here at Thompson & Knight. I'm a partner here. I'm in the bankruptcy group and I office here in Houston, and I also have an office in New York City. So it's a terrible place to have to go back and forth to, but I make it work as best as I can. And so I've been practicing almost 20 years. So I like to say, I just look young. I'm actually not young.
Based on age.
Right.
So a little bit about me, I'm Bemetra Simmons. Yes, I'm Demetra's identical twin. I like to think of myself as the pretty twin. No, that's real. I'm actually a nerdy banker. So I have an MBA from Wake Forest, been working in financial services for almost 20 years, doing everything from business banking to commercial banking, investment banking, wealth management, and now I lead the state of Florida for Mutual of Omaha Bank and all of those areas. So really excited to be here and share a little bit with you ladies this evening.
Yeah, so we sort of started Corporate Homie with the idea that men tend to have homies at work, people who give them the lay of the land and these unwritten rules that we don't always as women have privy to. And so it's like if you had a homie at work, it would be a
corporate homie. Stay with us.
This would be a corporate homie. And so that's how we sort of came up with the name. Today we're going to talk really quickly about some areas that, you know, I wish I had known when I was an aspiring lady lawyer. Just some topics that I wish someone had covered with me, sort of advice back to our younger selves, sort of, if you will.
Not your mama's advice.
But it's not your mama's advice. So
hence the lack of PowerPoint.
Right. So your mama would have a PowerPoint, right? So we don't have a PowerPoint. So it's kind of given from a younger perspective. So we'll just jump right on in.
Yeah. So the first thing we want to talk a little bit about is professional dress, right? So all dress is not created equal, and or should I say equally. And one of the biggest challenges is business casual. Like, it means lots of different things to lots of different people, especially in different parts of the country, and it can be very confusing. I feel like when you're a man, you can put on a golf shirt and khakis, you're good. Or if you don't want to do that, you just take your tie off with your suit, and bam, you're business casual. Meanwhile, we're struggling, like, do I wear no sleeves? Do I wear a twin set? Do I wear open-toed shoes? What do I wear?
Can I have a bare leg? Can I have pants?
Do I wear linen? Is seersucker okay? Like, you're just all over the place as a woman. So we thought we'd start there.
Yeah, so for me, I've always felt like, remember when I had my very first job, I clerked for a federal judge, and we were business casual in chambers and then business in the courtroom. And I went to my judge and I said, hey, I got my three suits. I got the business down. I'm not really sure what this business casual means. And he said, you should look like a lawyer. You should always look like a lawyer. And I was like, okay. And he says, well, what I'm saying is if you're at home and you're not sure if you look like a lawyer,
don't wear that.
And I have found that to be true. Like whenever I'm at home and I'm getting dressed and I think to myself, is it too tight? Is it too short? Is this going to pull? You know, then during the day, it was always the wrong thing to wear. Like if I have not been 100% sure,
or comfortable,
which also we'll talk about later, goes to your confidence and how you're going to present, you probably shouldn't wear things like that. Then for me, as far as I like to wear dresses, suits don't actually fit me that great. So I like to only wear them when I have to wear them. But as far as my dresses, if it's a dress that I would wear to like a brunch or a Easter church service or
a shower,
I don't wear that to work. There are like my work dresses and then there are like my, you know, kind of fun girly dresses, but that's just, it doesn't mean that's a universal rule, but that's kind of how it works in my mind. I do think I always looked a lot younger. So I think people sometimes were even confused if I was the lawyer. And so to me, the closer I got to looking that way, whatever that means for you, because I do think that means different things for different people, then I try to do that.
Increase your chances of not being seen as the court reporter.
Right, which I have been, right? That's going to be inevitable and that will happen. But, you know, and I remember someone said that to me when I was a summer associate back then. That's how old I am. We were not business casual. We were business. And I was walking through and I didn't have my jacket on. And one of the young women attorneys pulled me to the side and she said, you know, if I were you, I would wear your jacket because we're business. And if you don't, people are going to be confused about your role and you're going to be offended and you're walking around with your lip poked out. So you just want to keep those kind of things in mind. I don't think that doesn't mean you can't express your style, which we get that question a great deal. I mean, obviously, I have on leopard shoes today. So I'm real cute today. Right. And so I think you can express your style. You don't have to, you know, dress again like your mother or your mother-in-law, or your grandmother. But it is important that you think when you walk in the room that you're going to be seen and that you're going to feel like you're the lawyer in the room as well.
Yeah, I think you have to find a way to bring your style within the culture of your organization, right? So if your organization doesn't allow for pink suits, I wouldn't be the only person in the room in a pink suit, right? Like I was actually at a chamber meeting about 2 months ago, and a young brother came in and like this, it looks like something from a Steve Harvey outfit.
Yeah, we call him Steve Harvey.
And I was like, he's like, I'm going to get another wear out that Easter suit. But it was not appropriate for the Greater Tampa Chamber of Commerce. I'm like, you might want to wear that to a seersucker party for the Cubs. Right? Like, that's not what you want to have on.
Well, and seersucker is a perfect example. Like, if you're practicing in New Orleans, people wear seersucker.
Right, or Birmingham.
And Birmingham. Right. Like, that is very much a part. So I think you really need to be conscious and aware. Awareness is going to be such a big part of your career. You'll probably hear me say that more than once. As lawyers, we're paid for our judgment, and you will start sort of exercising that judgment now. Also, like, pay attention if you're, you know, in a summer associate, like how that group dresses, that floor. There's different floors that sometimes, like, you know, that are more business. What business casual on one floor literally is a golf shirt and khaki pants, and on the next floor, like Demetra said, it's just a button down and slacks. And so I just would, you know,
pay attention.
Right.
The last thing that I would say is I just keep a jacket in my office at all times, like a black jacket or a gray jacket, so that if it is Friday, because we're business at the bank, but if it is Friday and I get stuck in an emergency client meeting, I'm not self-conscious about what I have on because I can throw on this jacket that all of a sudden brings more of a professional look to it.
Oh, which takes me to, and you should always have an emergency kit. I actually brought mine from my office because I jumped in it today and B was like, you should show it. I keep an emergency kit in my office, always has. It has everything from, you know, a Tide pen to clean up, to a pick to do my hair, to toothpaste and toothbrush, to like a little extra makeup, to, you know, back in the day, I think there's still a thing, a round thing of pantyhose when we used to wear pantyhose. But just
Demetrius
so if
a
something
slight type
happens,
A, if y'all
I'm a little bit
out.
Type A. Something happens,
but
bobby
she's prepared.
Pins, there's some bobby pins, there's some double sided stick tape, double sided stick tape, because if you have worn the wrong thing and you need to close something up, everything's kind of in there.
So basically, Demetria's your friend at any event, right? Because she's got what you need. And
girl,
I can say that it's somebody who travels with her.
Yes. So that's sort of about sort of a quick down and dirty about dress. And of course, we are going to leave time at the end. So if you have questions about anything that we talk about. The next thing I think that a lot of times as women we really struggle with is our tone and cadence.
Professional voice.
Mm-hmm, our professional voice. And so there will be mansplaining. There will absolutely be mansplaining in your career. There will be people talking over you. There will be people. And so it's always important for you to be able to kind of project your voice in the room, have the ability to talk over people as well if you need to. That's not always appropriate, but there are times that that is absolutely appropriate. But also to make sure you're watching, thinking that maybe while that is great in a colloquial sense, it takes away from you inspiring confidence. So for me, one of the things I've had to work on with my tone is I speak really fast. I'm just a fast talker, and that is not helpful when I am trying to communicate my findings in a memo to a partner or in court for the judge. So one of the things I used to do when I first started practicing as a summer associate, I would write at the top of my notebook, slow down. Like it would always be written like across the top of my paper so that while I was talking, in my mind, I sounded like this. It just felt really deliberate. It came out in a way that people could understand. So everyone, I think, not everyone, but lots of women have like little tics in the way they speak that keep people from hearing the substance of what they're saying. And you want people concentrating on what you're saying substantively and not missing out on your genius because of those things like that.
I would say from the client side also, it's kind of as attorneys, it's your job to figure out how the clients like to communicate. There's a lot of times for me, you know, and that can be very regional, right? So you'll find you'll have type A people that they're like, be brief, be bright, be gone, right? They just want everything in bullet points. They don't have time for all that slow talking.
I'm that person.
You know, right. And so
you're that person.
Right. And then Tamika's like, me too, girl. So, and in different parts of the country, it's different, right? My first professional meetings, we went to a meeting in New York and everybody was screaming at each other, dropping F-bombs. And, you know, I was working in Memphis and I was like, holy moly, oh my word. I was literally clutching my invisible pearls. And they were like, that meeting went great. And I was like, did it? So, it's all relative, right? And then like, so for myself, you know, I've got, you know, a lot of masculine energy, my voice is deep. So I was scaring people, you know, that actually worked for me. So I have to like, I mean, people would cry when I talked to them.
I remember the first
time. I'm like, I haven't raised my voice. I didn't use any profanity. What is happening? He's like, I don't know. I feel like a dumbass. So I was like, oh my God, I suck at this job. Right? And then I call my mentor and he's like, just buy a box of Kleenex. I'm like, what kind of advice is this? So I really work hard to bring humor, you know, dial myself back, because I want people, especially folks who work for me, or the attorneys that I'm working with, to pay attention to what I'm saying and not be afraid to ask me a question or get clarification, because that's how mistakes get made.
You know, it's funny. I do that, too. I never thought of that. But I know there's the whole, like, you have to be aware of what the stereotypes are. And so, like, I know there's always, like, this
you don't have
angry,
to agree with them.
You have to agree
right?
with them. But, like,
I'm
the
super
angry
nice.
Black woman. So when I get angry, I get really calm. Right? No one, I have never yelled at anyone. But
neither
I'm always, like, Stephanie, perhaps we had a misunderstanding about the deadline. Because I know I don't have the luxury of raising my voice. I know that that will be perceived completely different than if Tom raises his voice. And then people will be gossiping about how I raise my voice. And so I just think you have to keep those things in mind, because what's most important to me is to be an effective communicator, not for people to be caught up in emotion, for me not to be caught up in emotion, not to be led by my emotion. It also calms me down when I lower my voice, so I don't feel so animated. And I feel like I have a very animated personality when I'm happy, so we should let us know that something different is happening.
So it's interesting that you say you get real low, and I've seen you do that to me, so I know what you're talking about. But for me, I'm a, you know, so I don't curse at people. I'm a ma'am, sir, right? That keeps me. And then I will ask a question as if I didn't understand. Help me understand how I asked for this and you did it. Where did we get sucked? Connect those two moments for me, which is what the what, right? But it doesn't sound that way.
And I did that too as a summer associate when I received projects, because, you know, I feel like people, lawyers, were moving at 100 miles an hour. And I didn't always feel like I could, you know, stop. So I would just say, before we go, really quickly, my understanding is this.
We're going to do this. That's
is
right.
That your understanding, so that you, you know, leave and or come in and say, I, you know, I just need quick 5 minutes to make sure that I'm clear on the assignment I'm working on for you. I think that helps, especially if it's a person that is moving really quickly. They know that you're not about to go into a diatribe, that, you know, if they are, to be brief, be concise and be out. They know you're about to be out. And that to me was really, really helpful, especially when I was first getting started, because I just didn't want to spend a great deal of time on a project only to find out that I didn't quite understand the project, or I had a nuance that changed the whole thing. But if I could repeat it back, what I have found is that if I couldn't write it down, then I probably didn't fully understand it, and I would kind of write it down and then repeat it back. And I felt like that was extremely helpful as a summer.
That's a fantastic tip, because when you're early in your career, you think you understand something. And I call it, it's like trigonometry and homework was for me. Like, I sit in class, I'm like, I've got it. It was second period, and I go, I go to basketball practice, I sit down at 6 o'clock in the evening, I'm like, I have no idea what we're doing.
What are we doing?
Right. So you want to make sure that when you go back to do the assignment, that you have a real clear understanding, because the worst feeling in the world, and we're telling you from experience, is to spend hours on something to find out you weren't even in the ballpark.
A great memo on the wrong thing.
On the wrong thing. Yeah. What time is it? 73 degrees and sunny.
Exactly.
So the next thing we want to talk about is what we call no housekeeping at work. This is very important for women, because by nature, we are more nurturing. So this means, like Dimitri calls it, don't care and feed the file, right? So don't be the person that's making all of the copies. Don't offer to order lunch. When they give you the task to order lunch, say, fantastic, I will get so-and-so, my assistant, to get that ordered for us, because if you take on the caretaker role, you will be the caretaker. Don't have candy dishes on your desk. Do not bring brownies into work.
I was at home watching Netflix and I made some brownies and I bought some for everyone. Maybe you could do that when you're the partner. That's not what you want to do as a summer associate. You are trying to establish yourself as a colleague and to be seen as someone who, you know, is practicing and going to be, you. And not that, because I love a good brownie. It's not that we don't all love brownies, because we do. It's about you wanting to set your trajectory. And that was really hard for me. Not the baking the brownies, because I don't bake that well, but just getting my mind around switching to wanting to be colleagues. Like, I even struggled when I got to the firm about calling people by their first names.
Who were my parents?
Right, because they were like older than my mom and dad. And if they were my mom and dad's friends, we're like Black and Southern. You don't call somebody's mama Carolyn. You like, well, hello, Miss Johnson, because I just didn't grow up with that. So I really was, I remember being young and just very much struggling with
and
the idea and uncomfortable But someone having to tell me, like, it's not going to be a sign of respect, especially if you're like TK, where we have an open door policy. Everyone goes by their first names. Everyone keeps their door open. It's a completely congenial environment. I can't think of anyone that we call at the farm Mr. or Ms. And so that will make, you know, just you want to fit in and make sure you're establishing yourself already in your career that
way.
Right.
And that's also important because your job is to generate revenue. So when you're doing all that caring and the feeding of the fowl, you're working on non-revenue, non-billable, speak y'all's language, activities, and that's not helping you, right?
Right, and I want to make sure we're clear. We're not saying don't be a team player, right? I have made copies. I have ordered lunches. I have done all of that. I just don't want people to perceive that that's my role.
That's my role, my responsibility.
On the case, right? I want to be a lawyer on the case, and what happens sometimes as women is we jump into those roles. No one has asked us to order the lunch. No one has. And I remember doing it. I was literally, I think, a first or second year associate, and I was so consumed. I don't even know why, with the sandwiches for the meeting. And I remember I went to the partner, and I was like, what time should I have lunch delivered, and how many sandwiches? And he said, don't ask me another question about the lunch. And then I was like, huh. So we're not really concerned about the lunch.
But what are we going to eat?
What are we going to eat?
Who's going to bring the brownies?
And so just him saying that just really snapped me back into, like, if we were having clients come in about the discovery, I need to be concerned about getting the draft of the discovery ready and making sure we had copies and that we had, you know, that I had my rules book with me and all of that, and let my secretary, my assistant, let her, like, I still took the task, but let her be concerned with the details of how many turkey versus ham, because that's what was really messing me up. I was real like, well, what if somebody done eat pork, and then what if we do, like, I just got too concerned, and I, like I said, caring and feeding as opposed to practicing.
Right. I mean, the worst example I probably ever saw of this, we had a baby banker who, you know, didn't do banker things, right? It was what I call banker hobbies, right? So she doesn't drink. She doesn't boat, you know. Prisons from Florida. This is deep. She didn't like, you know, college football. And so she decided the way she was going to get great and with the managing directors, the higher ups at the bank, was to babysit their kids. Oh, like epic fail, right?
But I could see that because she thought she would be in their
home. So she's like, well, I'm going to get personal time with them in their homes. And they were like, oh, that Jenny's a great babysitter, right? But she was not being seen as someone with a high future career. And, I mean, I don't know who told her and co-signed on that, because I can't imagine. I see all y'all's faces right now, like, everyone's cringing, like, oh, my word.
I love it, because millennials are like, girl, I don't babysit.
I don't even like kids.
Yeah. Gen Xers, we babysit.
Right, yeah. we're trying to do anything we can to get ahead, so.
Yeah. The next one is something I really did not learn myself until I was much, much senior, and so I'm always trying to share this with women earlier, like, boundaries prevent burnout. Boundaries prevent burnout. You cannot be a rock star if you burn out in year three, right? So there is a fine line. Our goal, if you listen to the podcast, we are like, hustle hard, homie. You have to work extremely hard, but you also don't have to do that on every task every way. You need to figure out, like, one thing I did do well is our dad is a pastor. So growing up, we were never allowed to work on Sundays.
Sacred Sundays.
My dad didn't play that. Like, he'd be like, well, you'll quit that job at the mall before they put you on the Sunday schedule. So we didn't work Sundays. So I really very much implemented that when I was practicing. The key to it is,
you can't tell anybody
that. I don't think anybody I ever worked with knew I had that role. Like, I never walked around like, my Sundays are sacred, and so I won't be.
I didn't read that email because
it was
a Sunday.
I won't be reading, and I did read emails, right? And I have worked Sundays, right? If I'm in trial, if something's, but for the most part, and I have worked some 12-hour Saturdays so I could keep my Sunday sacred. I have, I was the queen of a good hot potato about 8:30 Saturday night. Here is your draft. Whoop, whoop. Right?
Church.
Right. I'm going to be at church tomorrow. Having a little talk with Jesus. By the time that comes back, I can get to it, like Sunday night, and then turn my document. So I feel like there are ways to set boundaries. What's not good, and I think sometimes as women, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that, we are oversharers. So we want to explain why we are not going to do something or do something. And that is not something that men tend to do. They have a tendency to just go ahead and do what they're going to do.
Right. So no is a complete sentence. Because if you explain the no, what happens is people try to help you the yes.
Or they evaluate the quality of your no.
Oh, they evaluate the quality of the no. So what they say is, and this just happened to me, take my own advice. I was going on vacation to Jamaica a few weeks ago. And in the middle of trying to get a deal done, and I said to the prospects, like, well, I'm going to be landing in Jamaica tomorrow, so the only time I could do that would be, they were like, great, do you want to talk at 3:30? I was like, no, you were supposed to take from that I was going to Jamaica, that this will keep till Monday. And I thought, this is my fault. I should have just said, I am unavailable on Friday, because it could have kept until Monday. So what people do is when you tell them why the no is, they'll say, okay, well, if you do this and you do that and carry the one, and then you can still do what I want. So they will help you to a yes.
Right. And I found you really should avoid the word no, especially as a young associate. I've rarely used that word. It would be like, you know, a senior partner come in and say, can you help me with this project? And I would say, absolutely. But I have a project for Megan that's due on such and such, and I have another project due for Anna Marie, and then I have to, you know, and then, you know, Cassandra asked me to go to the such and such. What's your deadline like? Because that's really like, no, I can't. But you can't say no, because what people remember, and I'll say this, I'm a partner. What I remember is who told me no. That person, I'm like, you know what?
She was trying.
She was, Raven was trying. Like, I was trying to give her a partner, and she had this done for Megan and such a way, and she was still going to do my project. But really, you weren't, right? Like, because you can't. You're like, I'm a human. I cannot. So I think there is a, you know, we talk about this on one of the podcasts, like, all different ways to say no without using the word no. But it is important, because you're not going to do your best work. And remember, as a summer associate, as you're trying to give your, put your best foot forward. If you take six projects on to get done in 1 week, the chances that you can give out a really great work product and shine to get you towards your offer is slimmer than if you have four projects, right? So you want to be managing your work so that you can put your best work forward.
That's a great point. I mean, how you decline things is just as important as how you do things. I was just in D.C. a few, I guess about a month ago, with the Florida Bankers Association, and we were meeting with the Florida delegation of Congress people about various topics. And one of them, doesn't matter what the topic was, but one of the congressmen said, not going to do that. And I was like, well, wow, like, you work for us. That's how I felt, right, you know? And then another woman basically said, would love to hear more about that before I make a decision. They said the same thing, but it felt real differently, right? So Demetri makes a great point in terms of how you say,
yeah, let me
no
think about
you.
It is a good way. Let me check with my advisor. You always get advisors. You know, let me, okay, I'm balancing some things. Let me run that by Megan. I know she said we had a such and such. Let me see how I can do that, which is, and then sometimes, especially when you're young in your career, you need someone else to help facilitate your no,
right,
to help you get there so that you're not having.
About helping you prioritize everything you have on your desk.
Yeah. So the last thing is probably the one that's
our favorite thing.
Yeah, near and dearest to our heart is you don't have to think like a man. Like, I don't, despite what the world says, you don't have to think like a man to be successful. You can think like yourself.
It's actually your secret weapon. That you think differently than everyone in the room. Each one of you brings something unique to the table. I cannot tell you how much that has served me well as a banker, how much attorneys that I've hired, when I get a unique perspective. That's what we want. I don't want the perspective that everybody else, that every, you know, middle-aged white man is going to bring me. You want to bring your uniqueness. You want to bring that value to your problem solving, to your counsel.
Right, and you get to have that. And I am very aware of that. Even as I think through things, and especially it started when I was a summer associate and just sort of figuring out, like, how people got invited to, you know, activities, how I was choosing which activities I thought I needed to go to. That's sort of how I started playing golf, is I just was like, well, why can't we go play golf? I want to go to the golfing event and sort of, you know, but here's the
another secret. They're not, if you want to go, they're not going to tell you no. Do you know what I mean? They're not going to tell you no. Like that, if you want to go to something, you're a summer associate. We're here to provide an amazing experience for you. So if there's something that is happening, and even though it might not be something that you have any experience with, but you have some interest in, you should express that. And this, to me, as a summer associate, I think is where I really found some new loves that I don't know that I would have even had, because I had some experiences that I didn't have growing up. It was, you know, the first time I went whitewater rafting, I was a summer associate. The first time I bungee jumped, we don't let people do things like that anymore, I was a summer associate. But
same call liability.
Yeah, I just opened my mind up to some things. But also, I'm also very aware, and anyone who works with me knows I'm like that. I'm like, be the partner you wish you worked for. Be the colleague that you wish that you want to have. And so I am not the person who's like, have you seen Chelsea? I haven't seen her since lunchtime. I'm like, why are you telling it on Chelsea? Like, who, why are you doing that? Like, don't be that colleague. I am the person that if the firm is having an event and it's a women's initiative event, I'm like, I think we should have a woman chef. Like, I feel like that's the perspective that I want to bring to situations. I want to think outside of the box.
I want to be the woman in the room.
I want to be the woman in the room. I'm the woman in the room. I want to think like the woman in the room, because we have enough people who think like the patriarch and have thought that way. That role is good and taken. Like, we are not short of any patriarchal views. Like, we've got a lot of those. So what is unique is to think like you actually think, because you're already thinking these things anyway.
And I would also say, you know, be confident to share them, right? I cannot tell you how many times we're in a meeting, somebody doesn't speak up, and then afterwards they tell you something that was like brilliant. And you think, why didn't you say that in the meeting? The other secret I'll give you is most of the other people are winging it too, right? Like we play golf, they're awful, right? Like, you get on the golf course, you're like, oh, I don't want to get on a golf course because I'm bad. They're bad.
That is
like,
so true. The first time I ever played for work, I played in a tournament. I played in a tournament. I was so nervous. I mean, I was like shaking. You know, I'd taken my little lessons. I was ready. But then when we got up there, there were 8 people on the hole. It was like two
cards. It
might have
been 10 million people watching the Masters.
I felt like it was 50,000 people going to watch me tee off, right? But what's nice is women tee off last. So if you play in and play golf, so the first guy tees off, it literally went like 10 feet. It was like where Megan said it was
dribble,
like boop, boop, boop. And then the next guy hit it, and I thought, oh, I'm gonna be okay today. Like Demetrius said, they're not that great either. But I mean, they don't care. Like,
they don't care. They are horrible at golf. Some of them, they mess up the table at dinner. You're like, that's not your bread plate, right? You just messed the whole table up, right? And here you are, like, B's
you're
and D's,
worried.
B's and D's.
You know, like, are you underneath the table?
And then they're like, oh well, as they just munch on. So some of that just gets you some confidence. They're like, you're gonna make a mistake. It's fine. Right. What corporate home here is to make sure you don't make career limiting.
Right. We call them CLMs, but right. You're a summer associate. You're young. Like, this is the time to ask your questions. Like, if there was ever a time to feel comfortable, you know, you can start every question with, you know, I've never practiced in a law firm. So my question is, and there you go. Your
right.
question is not stupid.
And this is not a lawyer issue, a women lawyer issue. This is a professional woman issue. I mean, look at what's happening with the soccer team. Everything is about, I mean, they're killing it. Like, they're actually exponentially better than the men. The men have not qualified for the World Cup since 2010. And their money is not even a third of it, right? So this isn't about excellence, right? So,
yeah, that's right. Because Adidas they announced in March that for the first time, they were going to pay their endorsed athletes, the women endorsed soccer athletes, the same payout that they were going to pay them in. This is before the tournament started. I don't know that Nike has even made that announcement.
Right.
And they just recently, when Allison Feaster, the
sprinter,
they didn't have a maternity leave policy for endorsed athletes. So what you saw was a lot of endorsed athletes waiting to have their children until after their careers were over, because they had, like, you have to compete in this many meets, and you have to, and so she was the one like, I'm ready to have a baby and I don't want to stop working.
I can't do
20 events if I'm pregnant for 40 weeks and then I have a newborn. And so Nike literally this year just came up. So these issues are not unique to us. They're not unique to law. They're not unique to you or me. This is a part of the world ever evolving and changing, which is why when you have thoughts and you have things that you think could be done differently or you want to ask a question, you should feel free to do so. Because if she hadn't asked that, Nike still wouldn't have a policy for
women. They probably hadn't even thought of it.
I don't think anybody thought of it. And that's, I guess we should, that's a great place to end. You know, I do not go through my career. Lots of things happen that are, well, I'm going to say lots. Things happen that are unjust or inequitable. Rarely is it actually malicious.
Right.
That is just not the case. And so part of it is helping people realize that it's kind of a difference and there's a different thought and there's a new place. But it's usually not from a place of malice. I have not had many experiences like that at all in my career.
A great example is we were in California earlier this year. Demetra was getting an award. And this older gentleman, Demetra was introducing him to me, and he said, "Oh, how does it feel to be the underachieving twin?"
He sure did. And I was
I'm not working on my GED. Like,
and he didn't know what she did. He didn't even ask
but
her.
But he was like 80, and he was like, "You must be a loser."
Well, I mean,
she's
if you're
a
not
winner.
A lawyer. Oh, y'all
missed
it.
The joke.
But we want to make sure we leave time for questions. And so I know we told Negan we keep it around 6:30. I know we got some already.
Okay, I'll start.
That is a first.
Yes.
So this is a question from a rising 2L who's about to go through the interview process. And they want to know, what is the appropriate response in an interview when asked, what kind of law do you want to practice? It has come up in interviews, and I don't think we know enough to know the answer to that question. What response do you think is appropriate?
So I was that person. I had no idea what kind of law I wanted to practice, and actually found it really interesting that so many people thought they did know what kind of law they wanted to practice. I thought they were lying. Like, they didn't know either. I mean, there's a handful of people who I think, you know, their dad or mom is a lawyer, they grew up, or their, you know, mom is a controller, and so they're like, I'm really interested in tax, my mom's an accountant, things like that. But for the rest of us, we don't know. And I think I would have never found my practice area if I hadn't have been honest about that. And because I didn't know, I was like, okay, I don't know what area I'm interested in, but these are the kind of things I enjoy at school. Like, I was like, I like moot court, I like such and such. And then they put me in groups that supported those things that interest me, which is how I came to bankruptcy.
My question for both of you is, how much time do you spend on your personal development and kind of self-education and catching up on things that you may not be as familiar with if they're related to your work or even podcasting?
Okay, did everyone hear a question? Okay, this is a great question because, you know, one of the things that I believe is to give good counsel, to be great to your clients, you must have an educated opinion. And you don't even have to necessarily be right. You have to have purpose behind what your opinion is. And you can't do that if you don't stay up on what's going on in your industry, what's going on in your practice area. So daily, I listen to something about finance. And every time I work on a new deal, even if it's a deal that I haven't looked at, if I haven't looked at an assisted living facility in 5 years, I will go back and read policy and kind of get a feel for what's going on in the industry before I even start working on structuring that. So I would say, I mean, we're nerds. Don't let all this coolness fool you. We're straight up nerds, right? But so we listen to, I mean, I know you listen to a lot of podcasts on various different things. Reading periodicals,
reading books,
every week we're doing something. And I'll say this to people who don't, it's really noticeable, just so you know, and it becomes more prevalent. I remember talking to some folks when one of the big accounting firms was dissolving, and she worked at a competitor firm, and we were all like at a cookout on a Saturday, and I was like, y'all's industry is crazy right now, and you could just see the look on her face like, whatever do you mean? And I was like, what do you mean? And I remember thinking, I don't want you to be my accountant. That's what I took, and we were at a cookout, right? So I would say it's got to be, you got to have a love for what you do so that you're constantly educating yourself?
As far as the personal development piece, especially when I was, you know, in my summers, because I didn't do any reading during school. I had to read for school. I rarely read things, but I read books like in the summer. So I think I read, you know, Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office when I was a summer associate.
It's one of our favorites, yeah.
So that's one of my favorite ones. I love the Go Get a Girl's Guide. All of these are in the Corporate Homie bookstore. If you go to the website, they're all in there. All books that we ever talk about on the podcast, we're big readers. We still are. I think that came because we played sports in college and we spent a lot of time on buses.
Buses, yeah.
And again, women athletes don't fly to their games. They're on like crappy buses on the way. And that's where I really started reading a bunch. Like back then it was like LSD, like how to go to law school books. Now, you know, so I would recommend some of those, and we have some of those in our,
And we still do it because we're still, in our minds, somewhat baby podcasters. So we're always reading about different things to make our podcast better.
Or being entrepreneurs.
Entrepreneurs, you know,
entrepreneurs.
You know, following other successful podcasters. So we still do it even in our side hustle.
Yep. I mean, literally, I listened to a podcast last week about, we did a big speech for a big oil company in town, and then they wanted us to do something for for the legal department. They wanted to do something for the business side, and we needed to decline it. And so I was like, okay, I really want to listen to an episode. Like, what's the best way to say, like, this is an amazing opportunity, but
we
it's
can't
a no.
do it.
So I just did listen to one on that. So we still do that.
Great question.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. You got the mic.
We had a question come in from Dallas. So, do you two feel that the corporate culture for women is shifting in the wake of the Me Too movement? If yes, how so? And is that the kind of behavior, something you've seen in law?
I definitely think that. I think Me Too has shifted everything, not just in the law firm. Joseph Epstein got indicted today. Like, I think it has, for things that he did in, 2007. So I think that it has definitely shifted everyone. I think what's really been nice about it is it has started a conversation that wasn't being had before. I think that there was always this idea that these things happened everywhere but where I work, everywhere but people I know. Everyone's like, that is so terrible that is happening over at that place. And now I think people are like, hey, is it happening here? Or let's make sure it doesn't happen here. And I don't think legal is any exception to that.
And I also think that the culture is shifting, not only through the conversation, but some of it is, I've heard people say, I don't want to be in a room with a woman by myself, right? So it's like, that's not a good thing, right? Because now that you could be missing out on opportunities. But I think that there was always this undertone conversation of things not to do to be in a situation but to say that no one has ever been felt uncomfortable, I think every woman has some story, unfortunately, if she's worked for a number of years, if somebody did something that made them uncomfortable, unfortunately.
I'm a rising 2L at UT. I was wondering if you could say more about just sort of the balance between trying to show that I could, you know, fit into this sort of male-dominated environment as a colleague and bringing the female perspective to the table. So I think, for example, like sometimes they'll ask us for suggestions for, you know, summer events and things like that. And like I'm a single mom, for example. I wanted to suggest like, oh, like could we have more family-oriented like
right.
things that I could bring my daughter to? But I was kind of like, and maybe I shouldn't be like, oh, like let's do, you know, kind of going along with that nurturing. And I think somebody else had like suggested like a cooking class or like things that kind of, you maybe people see as more kind of female oriented and might see, you know, as just not fitting in.
Yeah. So one thing I think Thompson and I has gotten really great about is not putting those events, and this is what I mean about changing our own mindset, even as women, is putting those events in categories that's like a woman event. That cooking belongs to women and, you know, golf belongs to men. I've been really impressed with the firm that we've really tried to flip that this is a cooking event and anyone who enjoys cooking should come. Or we're inviting all of the summer associates. We're not having, like, as quiet as it's kept, a man enjoys a massage. Like, but like if you call it the woman event, then you know what I mean? And so I just think that it's important this is what I meant about, like, we shift that conversation. And so if you want to see something, you know, that included families, I think you should suggest it. I wouldn't say, as a single mom, I would, like, that's what I would avoid, which is, I think, what women tend to do. We tend to have these introductory clauses that, like, then chop off the credence of what we're saying, as opposed to, like, what if you said, like, I've gotten to know all these people, but I've not met their families, so we're going to have something more with families. Like, that's the same idea, but not pitched as if it's also about me. So one of the things we always give the advice in the podcast is, as much as you can, think about how you reflect back to the organization, not just how everything is good for you, but just how it's good in general for the organization.
And if you're thinking about that, there's somebody out there that's like, I want to bring my husband, or I want to bring my wife,
or
I want to bring my partner. And so family is family, right? So you're thinking about it in terms of your kid, but somebody else is like, we work 80 hours. I don't want to leave my husband at home. So there's somebody else that's thinking the same thing 9 times out of 10 that you are. That's why I said, you know, bring your unique voice and ask the question. Just like you said, don't frame it as a liability.
Rising 2L at South Texas here in Houston. And my question is, you mentioned that boundaries, or not creating boundaries, can lead to burnout. So for us as law students and people who are aspiring to have careers and still building those, what advice would you give to us as far as being present and being available, but still also having boundaries?
I love this question, because when we're talking about boundaries, we're not talking about not working hard.
At all.
We're not talking about, because that, like, makes my skin boil.
Because I'm like, there are working years. Yeah. There are building years.
And when you're in the middle of a project and somebody's like, am I going to make it home for dinner? No, no one's going home for dinner. I'm not going home for dinner.
You know, don't work on her team.
Yeah, there is no dinner.
You're on my team.
There's no dinner, no. But it is annoying, because that's not a question someone would have asked 15 years ago. They would literally, I can't tell you the stuff that Demetria missed, you know, when she was a young associate. I remember my grandmother saying, you know, I just called Demetria at work because she just loves to be at work. I'm like, she's not at work, nanny, because she loves to be at work. She's at work because she has to be at work. But yes, call her in the office at 9:30 at night. She ain't at home.
But I built that muscle as a law student. So, you know, my dad tells this story. He actually said in a sermon a couple weeks ago when I was at home, of it was, you know, finals, my first year, and my cousin had the audacity to get married the Saturday after Thanksgiving, right? I got to study, you know what I mean? Like, and so I was a first year, and so my dad says that, like, I got up that morning, and my grandmother made me a lunch, and I was like, okay, just drop me at I went to law school in Alabama, but we were in Memphis for the wedding, and I said, drop me at the University of Memphis Law Library, and my dad, you know, drops me off, and he's like, hey, what time do we need to come back and get you? And I was like, no, my boyfriend's going to come and get me, so we have dinner with friends at, like, 8:30. And he said, he was like, you going to stay there all day? And I was like, yeah. So the story he tells is, like, and I watched her walk off with her lunch pail into the library. But you're doing it now. You're working really hard now, and you're going to need that same muscle, you know, when you get to the firm. And so, and I am, you know, a big believer in, you know, it's almost like Zora Neale Hurston says, there are years that have questions and there are years that have answers. And I think there are years that you work really hard, and there are years that you get to, like, kick it, and there are days you work really hard, and there are days that you don't. But there is an ebb and flow. And so, like Demetria said, you know, I don't suggest, as, you know, a young person, you want opportunities, and you can't have those if you're, you know, at yoga.
Right, and what I mean by that, what we mean by the boundaries is, we weren't good at this. We were, like, literally the people at 4:30 in the morning responding to emails, not going to the gym, you know, gaining weight, not making ourselves a priority. That's what we mean by those boundaries, of saying, hey, I can get a workout. This can keep until 7:30, or I can work on that at 7 p.m. We're just saying, like, there's no 24-hour, 7-day-a-week.
Right. You're not running the country. McDonald's.
I was going to say, yeah, we're not running the country. We're not breaking news on CNN. That's what we mean by the boundaries. I hope that's helpful.
I have another writing question. This is about social media, and sort of two related questions. You know, should I make my Facebook page or my Instagram page private? And then if I get a friend request from a colleague at work, should I accept it?
Okay, so I'm going to start with that, because I feel real strongly about social media. First of all, you can make anything you want private. It doesn't mean it's private.
Like, somebody.
Stop that. Like, I don't, who told y'all that? Like, I cannot tell you how many times I'm not Facebook friends with somebody and somebody is like, did you see what she posted?
Yeah.
Like, or don't act like y'all don't screenshot people.
Screenshot
stuff
is people's friends.
Send it to your friends. So privacy, it's just like, it's not, it's a farce. And so to me, don't put anything out that you're not
proud of,
comfortable, I would say just more comfortable with anyone that you work with seeing, because it's going to be there. The second part of that question, I remember when Facebook first, you know, people were first getting on Facebook, like old people like me, and one of the Supreme Court justices sent me a friend request, like a Texas Supreme Court justice. So I wasn't going to be like, oh no, I would not like to be your friend. I host myself at the movies with. I was like, okay. like,
and this is before Facebook had the limited profiles. Before they had the limited profiles and all that.
What's the answer? The person that at the firm that you're interested, I mean, let me say this as someone, as a partner. I do not friend people who work for me. I do not friend people who summer. If they would like to be my friend, they can send me a request. I'm happy, but I don't friend down. I friend across, you know, because I don't think that's fair to them. I don't think it's fair to put them in that position where they have, but that will happen. And so that's when you do need to think about if you want to have, and if you're not really comfortable with your social media, then maybe deactivate it. I've seen people do that for some time. But I social media is such a big part of society now that I just think it's, you know, we don't go trolling looking for your pages. Like, I want to make sure that's clear. That's not something we do, but that doesn't mean that people aren't friends with people at the firm.
And being military kids, you know, we grew up in 10 states and I don't know how many countries. I'm always surprised at who knows whom, right? So you get on social media and you realize, like, your friend from high school went to law school with this person's husband, and all of a sudden they all live in Sicily, and you're like, how do y'all even know each other? So that's why even the privacy, because it's like 3.5 degrees of separation in real life for everybody.
Especially
I believe
now.
That when you're within about a 6-year age period and you went to college in like a 3-state radius, everybody knows each other.
Or someone knows someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But I will say this. Do a social media audit. Like, if you haven't thought about your social media and you are about to start, you know, your interview process, like, go back and do an audit of your page and, like, are you comfortable with all that? Because nothing wrong with it. It's like a bad breakup. Nothing wrong with going back and taking him off your page. Like, you can do that. That's allowed. You can do that. You can audit what you've already kind of put out there.
Hi, ladies. I'm just graduating from UF with a TAC Fell alum.
Woo, woo.
Thank you. And I wasn't here earlier when you talked about professional dress, but my question's geared toward hair. Mm-hmm. I want to know about hair in the workplace. I want to know how y'all feel about your natural mm-hmm. dudes, because I noticed that as soon as I saw your ad.
But do you like it?
I love it. I love it. Do you see this? This is natural.
Right.
So I just want to get your opinion on it,
sure.
What you've seen in the workplace, how mm-hmm. other people have reacted to your hair,
sure.
And what you feel a young
sure.
professional young
I'll
woman
start
do.
With this. So, you know, as Demetra mentioned, we've been working about 20 years, and the pendulum has completely swung. I'll speak plainly. I don't know that I would have been comfortable wearing my hair like this in 1997 when I graduated, because natural hair just wasn't where it is in life, in society. But I will say this, secondly, you want to work somewhere where you get to be you, because you have to be there so many hours of the day. So, for example, if somebody's going to throw my resume out because my name is Demetra, or somebody's not going to hire me because I have natural hair, that's probably not going to be the culture where I'm going to be successful anyway, because there's so many other things that are working against me. I would say more people who look like me have commented to me about my hair than people who do not. They don't even pay attention. They're like, oh, you got long hair today, short hair tomorrow. Oh,
your
it's red.
So versatile.
Oh, you're like, that's a wig. You know? But they don't know.
That was actually something I very much enjoyed as a young associate. I could go get my hair done and no one seemed to know it was completely different.
I mean, you sure with some finger waves, somebody gonna say something. But that's not what we're talking about.
But I agree. I think, and I think hair is still a conversation. I do think it's more of a conversation among women. I just don't think that men pay attention to our hair as much. I don't think people in majority culture pay attention. I just don't think we know those differences. I just don't think it's as, and Demetra's right, I've had more conversations with other people who look like me about my hair. But I will also say this, I was not really aware of how, like, you go natural and, like, somehow you're in the movement. And I'm not in the movement.
We're not in the movement.
I'm not. It's just my, it's just the hairstyle.
I'm trying to have less of a relationship with my hair. That's right. Why I cut my hair.
So, and I tell people, like, I'm just not in the movement. But when I went natural, I was in Dallas. I was already a partner. I was in Dallas, and someone in our, I think, like, staff came up to me, came to my office, because when you visit, there's always, like, an announcement that you're visiting. And she came to me and said, oh, you're the most senior Black woman in the firm, and your hair is natural. We can all be natural. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I can say, I don't know if I want all that responsibility about it. But I do think it is another example of what people see they can be. And so I do think as many as, like, young women wear their hair the way they want and you're still professional, then it changes. This is what I meant about you helping shape and change the narrative.
Also, I mean, we have natural hair, but it's not blue. You know, I mean,
it's red and blonde.
We've got cousins. They got crazy hair, right? I'm like, you that's a hair for a job, not a career, right? So you still do it within professional confines. Yeah. We have room for one more?
Another write-in from one of our offices. What is the appropriate way to talk at work, assuming that it comes up in a natural context, about the role that your faith plays in your life without sounding preachy or garnishing judgment? This person said, I know it can be taboo to some people to associate yourself with your faith.
So, I mean, I think both of us very much for corporate America wear our faith on our sleeves. I mean, we pray before we came in here, right? Like, that's just the people that we are. We pray over files. We pray over deals. People know that. I say my grace
before I eat.
And even when I'm at work, I'll say, if you'll just give me 1 second, I say my grace. Like, I just, that's who we are. So, but we're not like, and you too, like, follow me as I follow
Jesus
Christ.
Well,
you know, we're not,
creepy.
No,
we're not creepy.
You know,
that's not us.
Right. But people know that, you know, we're Christian, you know, that we're people of faith. So we don't hide it, but we're not, you know, trying to convert everybody at work with us. Conversely, when I work for BB&T at a, you know, 500 member officer meeting, they prayed to Jesus and I almost left, and I believe in Jesus. I was like, there are 500 people in this room. There are people in here that do not believe in Jesus. They
don't believe in anything.
Like, this is wrong, right? But I went and talked to our regional president. I said, hey, you guys should probably be mindful. You no longer are Eastern North Carolina Farm Bank. You're in major metropolitan areas, and everybody's not rolling with Jesus. And that's something that you guys know. That was a big risk, right? But for me, it wasn't even about my faith. I was just like, what else are they doing like this? You know,
what other kind of meetings are they having?
Right. Just scary. The last thing that I would love to leave you guys with, and I'll let Demetra leave her parting words, is you're in your career now. You're in law school. You're in your career right now. Business school and law school is where we stop using our nicknames, right? I didn't want to be the banker because that is super corny, right? And so, and it's also ways now that we can distinguish between who knows us professionally and, like, who grew up with us. As Demetra says, if you don't want to be peaches, you know,
stop calling yourself peaches in law school
because this is, you're in your career now. So all these things that we're talking about, your hair, how you want to be present yourself, the language that you use, you want to start working on those things today. Absolutely right now. If you find yourself as the person that's saying, you know what I'm saying, or, yeah, girl, or, you know, whatever, don't do that. Don't do that when you're at school. Don't do that when you're at your study groups. You know, save that for the weekend so you can get in the habit of, as we like to say, as athletes, exercising that muscle.
Well, I think that's a great way to end, because I can't tell you, even as you get in your career, how many times
someone will want a recommendation of a lawyer. I went to law school, like I said, in Alabama, and we have, you know, my law school has a Facebook group, and my class has a Facebook group. And people often are in that group like, hey, does anybody know, you know, a bankruptcy lawyer in Texas to help? And so now you're basing your recommendation off of what you know of them from law school.
And that was 19 years ago.
And that was 19, stop telling my age. That was years ago. And so that's
was 1952.
Why you have already started your career. That's what I tell you. I have already started your career. And so that's something that I think that people, it's not fair, right? Because you're 20, you know, 3, 24, 25 years old, but people will also remember, oh, that guy was on my moot court team and he never practiced. He never showed up. And so now they think you're a lawyer who doesn't practice or show up. And that's not fair, but that is how it works. Like, your reputation is basically already forming now. And so I think that is a really good place. And we'll be around. Another thing I want to let you know is we have
100 episodes. Yeah.
We just hit the 100 episode mark. So we have a lot of topics, and, you know, we just hit stuff really briefly today. But also, we check the mailbox we have. You can always email questions@corporatehomie.com, and we cover topics. Literally now, almost all of the episodes come from homies. They come from people who are listening. I just checked the mailbox today and got like 4 new topics. So, if there's something we didn't cover and you want us to cover a little bit more, just shoot us an email and we'll be happy to talk about it on the podcast. And we don't tell your name or anything. We never say, like, you know, I got this from Georgiana in Houston. She wanted to know. It's just like we got this question.
And until next time, hustle hard, homies.
Thank you so much. Yes, I think they deserve a second round of applause. And please stick around, food, dessert, drinks, and thank you to the other offices for joining us as well.